from the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal. This is Free Expression with Jerry Baker.
Hello and welcome to Free Expression with me, Jerry Baker, from the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm delighted you're joining us this week. If you're not already a subscriber, please do subscribe to Free Expression wherever you get your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a very nice review. This week, the political crisis in Israel. Is Benjamin Netanyahu really pushing the Jewish state on the path of illiberalism and undermining democracy, as many critics in the US and elsewhere allege? Or is he merely undertaking a long overdue effort to rebalance a political system that gives way too much power to unelected judges? And what are the wider implications for the world of the struggle between Israeli conservatives and their critics? Is it another sign of the slow collapse of liberal democracy? And if so, should we be concerned or maybe even hopeful? This week, under pressure from massive protests and resignation within his own coalition government, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, put on hold his plan for a radical overhaul of Israel's Supreme Court. The plan would have significantly increased the elected government's role in choosing members of the court and would have sharply limited the scope of the court to intervene in disputes. The proposal outraged many in Israel who saw it as another example of advancing illiberal democracy. And it's been heavily attacked in many of Israel's allies, including here in the United States, as heralding a dangerous lunge towards authoritarian populism. So what happens next? I'm joined this week by Ben-Dror Yamini, an Israeli journalist and commentator who's written for numerous newspapers and magazines in Israel and around the world. Yamini is a strong defender of Israel against its many critics overseas, and he often identifies, rightly, anti-Zionism as a form of anti-Semitism. But he's also knows at times when the right time to criticize the Israeli government, and he's been speaking with great interest and great authority on this subject of the Supreme Court. And Ben-Dror Yamini joins me right now. Mr. Yamini, thank you very much for joining Free Expression.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to get into the merits or demerits of what Benjamin Netanyahu has been trying to do and into the substance of the debate over the judicial reforms. But can I just start off by asking you, as someone who's been observing Israeli politics for a very long time, what explains this explosion that we've seen in the last week of protest? We all saw the pictures, mass protests at the weekend in Tel Aviv and elsewhere, the resignation of the defense minister, the news that members of the Israeli Defense Forces, the Air Force in particular, were refusing to report for duty and to perform their functions. This has been an extraordinary outpouring of protest. And of course, it's resulted in Mr. Netanyahu, for now at least, withdrawing or suspending the reforms. Can you explain why this has been so explosive?
Okay, we're speaking about something which is under debate for 30 years about. Actually, from 1992, when the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, legislated two basic laws that became, not officially, but kind of the Israeli constitution. That's how it began. And since then, we have a big debate about what we call judicial activism. When the Supreme Court took upon itself many, many, many rulings that many people, nothing to do with being affiliated to any party, but many people did not like. I'm speaking even about many scholars. So the Supreme Court was criticized again and again. And the backlash we could see was only a question of time. And in the very moment when it was declared the new reform by Justice Minister Yariv Levin, it was clear the debate is going to the streets. And that's what happened, actually. Now, the point is that, needless to say, I mean, the Supreme Court should have been criticized. The Supreme Court, according to many scholars, went too far. But nobody knew that the political arm is going to go too far just as well. And that's what they did. And accordingly was the backlash. Many people went out to the streets because they were afraid. And maybe rightly so, that it's going to damage the Israeli democracy.
When you say judicial activism, and I want to talk about that, that's something that will be very familiar to a lot of American certain people who listen to this podcast, a lot of readers of the Wall Street Journal. It's something that the Wall Street Journal's editorial page has railed against in the United States for a very long time. In fact, you know, I think many of us would argue that America has suffered from a surfeit of judicial activism over the years from very progressive judges. When you talk about that in the Israeli context, can you just give us some examples so that we understand? Because I don't think this side of the debate in the international press gets a lot of coverage. I think, again, we'll go on and talk about what the reforms would do and whether or not they represent a kind of a threat to democracy. But a lot of the coverage in the rest of the world's media of this focuses on this supposed threat to democracy. But there's without any explanation as to why it is that there is dissatisfaction, particularly, I think, probably among conservatives with the court. Can you just explain the kind of things the court has done over years that has caused such concern among some Israelis about this judicial activism?
I'll give you an example. When there was a party years ago, speaking about 25 years ago, that is against the very existence of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. And according to basic law and according to the party's law, this kind of party cannot run to the Knesset. I mean, it's clear cut. The law is there. A basic law is there. Basic law, when I'm saying basic law, I mean, it's a kind of part of the constitution. And the Supreme Court decided upon. No, they can run. Why? Because of freedom of speech, but it's totally against the law. Just one example. I can give you a lot of other examples concerning immigration. Whatever the Israeli government tried to do in order to prevent the mass immigration in so many infiltrators, it didn't work. It didn't work because there was a policy of the government and there was a policy of the Supreme Court. So just two examples about what we are talking about.
And explain, if you would, how the Supreme Court gets picked in Israel. Again, I know it's a very, you have a very different constitutional framework from here in the United States. There is no written constitution. Things can be changed by legislation in the way that obviously the constitution can't be amended here simply by legislation in the United States. I should say, by the way, many of the same people who've been criticizing Benjamin Netanyahu are people who've been very critical of the Supreme Court recently in the United States and actually want to change the nature of the Supreme Court and the size of the Supreme Court here. Give us the explanation as to how the court is chosen and why that may have led to some of these kind of activities. Decisions that you're describing.
Yeah, okay. We can share it to two periods. One until 2007. And until 2007, it was mainly the judges who decided who is going to be in the Supreme Court. Yes, there was a committee, and in the committee we had politicians, but they had the power actually to dictate whatever they wanted until 2007. So many good scholars who were candidates to be in the Supreme Court could not make it because their opinions, their agenda was not liked by Aaron Barak, for example, who was the chief justice for many years. So that was until 2007. And from 2007, there was a change that in a way empowered the politicians. You need a concession between the two main parts in the committee, which mean judges and politicians. So it began to change. And right now, we have more conservative judges in the Supreme Court. So the criticism is mainly about what happened before 2007. That's why, and that's explained, the protest, because people say to the government, to the coalition, to Benjamin Netanyahu, look, there was a change, and it's not anymore that the judges decide who is going to be in the Supreme Court. But we are speaking about two periods. Lately, in the last 15 years, it is much better.
Explain that, because as I understand it, again, and please, I may not have all the details correct, but I understand that there's a commission now. A minority of members, I think, are currently appointed by the government, and the rest are appointed by the judges themselves or the commission themselves. It's a sort of a self-perpetuating or self-reappointing body. That's what Netanyahu, and with these proposals, that was one of the proposals that he had to change it, right? So give the government, I think, an effective majority on that commission that appoints the Supreme Court members.
Yeah, to give the coalition, which is composed of the Likud party, of course, and extreme right and ultra-Orthodox. I mean, they will decide who are going to be the judges according to the reform of Mr. Yariv Levin, the justice minister. Yes, so the balance changed completely and the power will be only of the politicians. And I mean, in many countries, it's the politicians who actually choose who will be in the Supreme Court. But they have a kind of check and balances that we do not have in Israel.
Yeah.
So, you know, even when you deal with this kind of comparative law, you have to remember many other aspects of what does it mean to choose a judge.
You come right to the point there of what I think is obviously, what I think does concern people, even people who I think are sympathetic, and there are many conservatives, including members of his own Likud party, I think, who have expressed concerns about what the coalition government is trying to do. And it's exactly what you described there, which is that in effect, the government would have the majority on this commission that appoints the members of the Supreme Court. Now, to a lot of people, you know, here in the United States, those of us who are used to the constitutional system in the United States, now that's a concern because, again, in the US, president nominates Supreme Court justices, but, you know, has to be confirmed by the Senate. And that's usually, in the end, the president usually gets his way, but sometimes he doesn't. And there have been occasions when he doesn't. And there is a deliberative process that has to be gone through. And then another president comes in of a different political stripe and he or she can appoint her members of the court. This does sound as though, from the way you're describing it, from everything that I've seen, as though it kind of would give the government the ability to choose the top law officers in the country who will decide on the legality of what the laws that are passed by the Knesset and the actions that are taken by the government. That does sound, as you say, that it lacks the kind of checks and balances that one would want to see in a liberal democracy, doesn't it?
Yes, it is. It's exactly. I mean, all what you said is part of the arguments of the opposition, saying, yes, okay, you want to change, let's make a change. But let's not forget that the change was already in 2007 when they changed the law. And you need a special majority in order to nominate a new judge. That's one. Second, I mean, we are speaking about Israel. And in Israel, in a small country, and there are so many pressures coming from parties and activists of the party. We don't want it. We don't need it. I have to be very cautious, but sometimes it might be pressure coming from criminals even. So, no, we don't need it. No, we don't want it. And the majority do not want it. And what is very, very interesting about what happened in the last 2-3 months is that it was not something like opposition against coalition. It was, yes, of course, opposition, but many, many people who voted for the coalition, many prominent figures that are known as part of the right-wing coalition, they said, no, no, we cannot accept it. You went too far. Yes, we want a change. Yes, we want a reform, but not this kind of reform. Don't go too far, because too far, it's actually, yes, to make damage to the Israeli democracy. And that's why people, so many people, I mean, there was not any suspicion that was declared just 3 days ago without the majority going out to the streets. And you can see it in every poll that was published. Even yesterday evening, a poll that was conducted by the right-wing TV station. So they admit we do not have the majority.
One argument that I've heard from supporters of the government is that, look, Israel just had an election at the end of last year, the latest in many, many elections. And actually, unlike those previous elections, this one did produce a pretty decisive result, or at least Benjamin Netanyahu was able to form a coalition with a fairly solid majority by historical Israeli standards. Anyway, certainly recent historical Israeli standards. Got 63 seats in the Knesset.
64.
And therefore, this was part of the manifesto. This was part of what they ran on. They should be allowed to get this through and to implement what they promised in the campaign. Why should these protests stop them from doing that?
Yeah, it's a very good point. I'll tell you, there is a huge difference between coalition agreements and a constitutional change. When we are speaking about a constitutional change, we need a majority. We need a concession. We need a lot of talks, conversation between the parties in order to legislate it. You do not force a constitutional change in this way. And that's what many people, including Knesset members from the Likud, said it. No, you don't do it because you just have a majority. By the way, it's not really a majority. It was, you know, a kind of accident, because when you look at the popular vote, it was something like half and half. So you cannot actually exploit results in order to force a change that will change actually the face of Israel. I mean, and might even damage democracy. You don't do it.
How much of this is about objection to the specific proposal? And there are other elements we should say, obviously, in the proposal, I think, and as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong.
You are not wrong.
But what I was going to ask is, how much is it objection to the proposal, and how much is it about Netanyahu himself, or maybe, perhaps more importantly, Netanyahu with these religious parties that are part of the coalition? How much is it concern about them rather than about the proprieties of the constitutional question itself?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because yes, it is part of the problem. Why? Because actually, when you have this kind of coalition, because of the system in Israel, the coalition system, because of that, actually, when you are a small party like extreme right or the ultra-Orthodox, you have the power actually to enforce whatever you want. Because otherwise, Mr. Netanyahu will not have a coalition. So the outcome was a set of laws that nobody wanted. For example, right now we are coming to Passover and they have a new law against the chametz, which means something that you are not allowed to have in during the Passover. Now, people were like, what are you doing? I mean, why you are enforcing us what to eat and what not to eat? Why you are telling us what to do and not to do? I mean, there's nothing to do with majority, it has nothing to do with coalition, it has to do with enforcing the values of the extreme ultra-Orthodox parties on the whole public. No, we don't want it. So yes, the protest was not only because of the judicial change. It's because actually the judicial change, the judicial reform overhaul, as we can call it as we want, will not even allow the Supreme Court to say, look, you are doing something which is against basic liberties. And that was a problem. Because by this kind of reform, every protest will be oppressed because the Supreme Court will not have the power to revoke it.
We're going to take a short break then. When we come back, I'll have more with Ben-Dror Yemeni, Israeli journalist and commentator. We're talking about Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister's attempts to reform the Israeli Supreme Court. And now they're on hold. What comes next?
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
You're listening to Free Expression with Jerry Baker. Don't forget, you can listen to the latest episode anytime on your smart speaker. Just say, play the Opinion Free Expression podcast. Now, back to Jerry Baker.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with Ben-Dror Yemeni, Israeli journalist and commentator, about Benjamin Netanyahu's plans to reform the Israeli Supreme Court. And we're looking at the wider implications of those plans and what they might mean for the rest of the world. Let's just move on then to what's going to happen next. We saw on Monday after these protests and after the resignation of the defense minister, Mr. Gallant, Benjamin Netanyahu said he would pause the process. There'd be consultation. There'd be review. As you say, it's Passover. Knesset is going into recess. Nothing is expected until the end of April, beginning of May. What's your sense as an observer of this and someone who knows a lot about what's going on? What's your sense of now of what is going to happen? Is there going to be some revised proposal? Is he going to drop it? What's the likely outcome?
I guess that no doubt that there will be a revise. The only one question is, will this kind of revise will be accepted by the opposition and by the people who went out to the streets, who put themselves to the streets? I don't know. I don't know, because we cannot really guess what is going to happen in the next 3-4 weeks. We hope, we pray, that there will be a change that will enable the two sides to legislate something which will be agreed upon by the majority in Israel, something which we do not have now. But let's not forget that we are not speaking only about this aspect. We see the damage to Israel. We see what's going on with the relationship with the United States. We just saw the declaration came from President Biden that he's not going even to invite Prime Minister Netanyahu to the White House. I mean, something which is unprecedented. I mean, the damage is to Israel. And that's why this kind of reform is not only about the judicial system. It's something which is much wider.
That's an interesting question. So is that, in the end, do you think, why Netanyahu decided to suspend the process now? Because of the wider damage, you say, potentially damage with the United States, the damage to Israel in the eyes of the world. And I think one of the things we were very struck by was Defense Minister Gallant saying it was a specific threat, and the president, I think, saying it was a specific threat to national security, with a lot of these servicemen and women refusing to report. Had it become such a large diplomatic and security problem for Israel that trumped in the end whatever political objectives Netanyahu and the coalition were trying to achieve, do you think?
It's interesting because in many ways, in many aspects, I mean, Israel is a unique kind of country. I mean, Israel is in many aspects is singled out. I mean, Israel is not Turkey. Israel is not Poland. Israel is not Hungary. And when something of that kind is happening in Israel, because of the strong connections to the United States, needless to say, the strong connection to the Jewish community in the United States, because of that, everything which is happening in Israel is becoming a kind of not only an Israeli problem. It became a kind of global problem. That's why so many newspapers in the world publish so many articles about what's going on in Israel. I mean, like if it's happening in their own country. So that's why the impact of the change is not limited to Israel. The impact of the change, of the reform, of the overhaul, the impact is so wide. Relationship with the diaspora, relationship with the Western government, and so on. So what we say, people in Israel, the majority is saying, the government, look at what you are doing because of your coalition needs. The damage to Israel in general is going to be so high. And you spoke about the soldiers, the pilots who were part of the demonstrations. I mean, from the Israeli Air Force. Why? Why did they do it? Because actually, the reform is going to expose them to the ICC, International Criminal Court. Right now, when Israel has an independent judicial system, nobody is going to touch them. Because if you did something which is considered to be a criminal act, whatever it is, or crime against a war crime or something of that kind, yes, you are going to be judged in Israel. After the reform, you have an exemption in Israel, but you don't have the exemption in international tribunals. And that's why so many soldiers went out to the street and said, no, we are not willing to be exposed because of your coalition needs.
How much damage do you think this has done to this government and to Netanyahu domestically and internationally, and how does he recover from it?
First of all, it's, I think, the biggest damage ever. Biggest damage ever. In both aspects, internally and with a relationship with a lot of countries. And people see it, and people understand that it cannot go on. Will he continue? Will he insist if there will not be a compromise? I don't know. I hope not. But I have to admit that lately, many of us who are not extreme left-wingers, not extreme right-wingers, we are worried. We are worried about the way that he decides. We are worried because something went on over there. I mean, even if we did not like him before, we could appreciate that he cares about the country. And you know what? Yes, we are afraid. I'm not sure that that's what he's doing. And just to see what happened in the last 3 months, in order to understand that we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem.
What happens to those who were very eager to see this reform? I mean, you just laid out right at the beginning a pretty strong case as to why so many people thought judicial reform was necessary, an activist Supreme Court that was essentially overruling the wishes of the politicians and, you know, through them, the wishes of the people. If this is now dropped and so you just go back to having the system you got before, then presumably those people, many members of the coalition who really wanted this reform, what's their reaction likely to be?
Oh, it's a good question. It's a very good question because actually, yes, I mean, we cannot have a victory to one side. No, it's not what we need. We need a compromise. And the compromise, the meaning is, yes, to limit the power of the Supreme Court. Which, yes, in Israel, it's, I think, no other country has a Supreme Court with such a power. It should be limited in a way, but not with a damage to the Israeli democracy. So will they be able to find a compromise that will enable, first of all, yes, some limitations, and from the other hand, to keep the Israeli democracy? I think that there are solutions. I think some of the solutions and the compromise drafts are on the table by very prominent scholars in Israel. I hope that they will adopt it and it will be for the benefit of both sides, coalition, opposition. But yes, change must be. Otherwise, they will continue with the original reform, which we do not need. So let's not declare a victory. Nobody should declare a victory.
I want to talk to you a bit about the wider implications of this. You've already hit on, quite rightly, you've talked about, you know, Israel is not Poland or Hungary, but there have been comparisons made in the international media to what's going on there, which is, you know, the attempt essentially to remake, especially in Poland, to rein in the Supreme Court and to rein in judicial activism and to make the Supreme Court more accountable somehow to political and popular wishes. Similar movements in Hungary. As I said, we've seen it even in the United States. It is ironic that so many critics of Israel in the United States here are those who actually were very unhappy with Supreme Court decisions, particularly this recent decision on abortion in the United States, the Dobbs decision last year. And they want to make the Supreme Court somehow more responsive to political pressures. How do you see this wider issue? And again, it does look like this is going to be unresolved, at least for the time being in Israel. But this wider issue of balancing the desire to have strong checks and balances within a democracy in a constitutional framework with also the impatient desire that people have to see the governments that they elected do things they want to do. And again, you know, this is not uncommon. This happens in the United States. It happens in Britain. Britain has had a lot of these issues. And Britain, like Israel, is a sort of similar constitutional framework without a written constitution. And again, this is framed by many of the critics of Israel, the critics of Netanyahu as a illiberal democracy on the march, as just as it is in Poland and Hungary and elsewhere. But it seems to me it's much more complex than that, and that getting the balance right between fulfilling the democratic wishes of the people when they elect their government and having the kind of legal constitutional checks and balances that we all want to see so we don't have untrammeled majority rule, getting that balance right is a challenge, isn't it? How do you see these events in Israel in the context of that wider debate about balancing democratic rule with the restraints that you want in a constitutional democracy?
Yeah, part of the problem is that we do not have a constitution. We have some basic laws that are supposed to be a kind of constitution, but no, we do not have a constitution right now. And it's part of the problem because we do not have the check and balances that you have here in the United States. And yes, I do know, I'm familiar with the big debate that is taking place here. I mean, generally speaking, we cannot say that judges many times are better than politicians. No, we cannot say. Many times it's judges with their strange rulings that people do not accept. I mean, you spoke about abortion. We can go to history, what happened in the Civil War in the United States with the Dred Scott, a case speaking about many, many years ago. And we remember even what Abraham Lincoln said about judges. No, we don't want them to rule us. I mean, there is a very famous sentence that he said in that time, before the Civil War. So yes, we do have the same kind of problem. And we are saying many times, and I'm one of them, who is saying, no, we don't want the Supreme Court to be the new government, the, you know, a platonic government of the state of Israel. We do not need it. We do not want it. So that's why we need checks and balances. But we cannot move from one extremism with the judicial activism to a new reform, which will be a kind of a political activism. We need check and balances. Will they find a way to have a compromise that will enable both sides, both political arm and judicial arm, to live in peace? I'm not sure. I mean, we don't have this kind of peace, not in the United States and not anywhere else, but we do need a new way of thinking. But in Israel, it's much more problematic, and I cannot ignore it. And let's say, I mean, it's the ultra-Orthodox parties. Without them, we could have a constitution. But they actually, yeah, they don't let us, they do not let it happen.
This in some ways is the kind of one of the defining issues of our age, though, isn't it?
Since when the debate began, my opinion was that the Israeli democracy is much stronger than the Israeli politics. Now, what happened when the reform was in a way suspended, at least for a month, it proves what I said all the time. Eventually, yes, democracy will win. I do hope many times you can predict something and it will not happen. I do hope that what I'm saying now, the Israeli democracy eventually will win. I hope it will stay like this even a month from now. I do hope. But yes, in order that the democracy will win, we have to be much stronger. And that's why people went to the streets, not against the election. We know exactly what happened in the election, but against any kind of damage to the Israeli democracy.
Bendrua Yemeni, Israeli journalist, commentator, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We'll watch with interest, see what happens there in the next few weeks and months. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of Free Expression. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. We'll be back again shortly with more deep dives into the big topic shaping our world. So please join us then. In the meantime, have a great week. Thanks for joining us.